go right to Coach Sark's weekly news conference.
I owe an apology to Longhorn Nation. I made a mistake at the end of the game and not singing the Eyes of Texas when the game was done. That was not anything intentional. That was not anything that had to do with our players. I think our players just followed me up the ramp into the locker room. Obviously upset by the way the game ended, and literally walked off the field. So I apologize to everybody for that. That'll never happen again. But again, it was not intentional. It was not premeditated by any means. That was just a mistake on my part. Nothing to do with the players. They had followed my lead on that. So that won't happen again. I think in assessing the ball game, a lot of what I thought post game, I think when you look at the tape, really holds true. I thought we created quite a few explosive plays, especially in the first half of the game offensively. Second half really struggled to find rhythm in what we were doing. We had some opportunities late in the game to make some plays. Didn't quite capitalize on it. Really struggled on third down in the second half. I think we were 1 for 9 or something on third down in the second half of that game, which in turn, a lot of three and outs. We were getting off the field, and I thought our defense played pretty well in the third quarter and gave us a chance. You know, they were getting off the field on third down, but over time, into the fourth quarter, they were able to sustain some drives. The quarterback used his leg some on third down. They extended some drives and obviously outscored us 14-0 in the fourth quarter. So, you know, when you talk about playing complementary football, I don't think that we did a great job of that, of giving our defense a rest, maybe as we did in the Iowa State game where we were able to kind of get back on the field, sustain a drive to get them some rest to go play. So penalties obviously played a huge factor in the game. 14 penalties enforced on us. I think we had one or two others called or offsetting penalties. So way too many penalties, way too many self-inflicted wounds, pre-snap penalties on both sides of the ball, false starts, offsides, and then naturally the DPIs, you know, the pass interference on us calls were big in the game. And they had none. You know, that's the way it goes. That's a lot of yardage that you're giving up and getting yourself behind the eight ball that can affect the game. All in all, you know, I think for our team, it was a very frustrating loss. Oklahoma State's a good football team. We felt like we could go in there and win that game. I thought we had more than ample opportunity to do so. Didn't take advantage of it. But now we're into a bye, and I think the bye is much needed. We're a little banged up as a football team right now. So we've got a lot of work to do. This week will be dedicated to getting healthy, one. Two, developing a little bit more depth on our team going into these final four games so that we can rely on some of these younger players, maybe not so much just on offense and defense, but on special teams, where a lot of our key players are playing a lot of snaps, which showed up Saturday. I think we played 46 snaps on special teams, which was a lot of plays. And I thought our special teams played fantastic. They had a heck of a game against a good special teams team. One, getting healthy. Two, development of those young players so that we can gain trust in them to put them on the field to do what they need to do. And then lastly, understand the opportunity that we have. We've got a great opportunity. There's a lot of football left to be played in the Big 12. We've got a great opportunity with some quality opponents, you know, coming down the barrel. And we need to play well in these games to hopefully give us an opportunity to still make it to Dallas. But we've got to control what we can control. As I say to the players, we got to mow our own lawn, and that's taking care of business in 2 weeks when we go to Manhattan. So a lot of work to do. Frustrating that we didn't come out with a victory. There were some positives in the game that I'm proud of the guys, but didn't play well enough consistently in the game to come out on top.
One quick one. Do you have an update on Anthony Cook?
Yeah. So Anthony Cook ended up having a broken arm. I think the key for us, obviously with the bye, having 2 weeks between games, we'll just got to monitor this thing closely. We've seen people play with broken bones before. He's week to week for us right now. We'll see how quickly he can get back.
And then you mentioned depth in all three phases, but with Cook's loss and then after both Jaron and Jadae played 100 snaps, is the secondary a focus of that area?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, because not only are they playing those snaps on defense, they're critical players for us on special teams. You know, Jaron's a key component of our special teams. Anthony Cook's a key component to special teams. Jade's a key component to special teams. Jalen Gilbo's given us a lot of reps on special teams. Ryan Watts, who wasn't able to finish the game, is a key component on special teams. Michael Taff is a key component. So, you know, we've got to find some secondary players that can contribute, maybe not as a frontline starter on offense, but can be a backup on defense or on defense, but can be a backup player on defense, but contribute, you know, 10 to, you know, 12 snaps on special teams.
Stay on the right, Terry.
Coach, the penalties were a major factor in the game. OSU coach said that was probably the biggest reason that they won. Can you take us into your world? How will you address that this week and next week? And, you know, what does that look like? Is it a discipline problem? Is it a coaching problem?
Well, I think one is understanding the situation. You know, it's twice now in 2 weeks. Defensively, teams have gotten into the red zone and used a hard count and caused us to jump off sides that have created first downs, which then in turn they went and scored after that play. So it's two consecutive weeks of that. So I think, one, it's an understanding of where we're at on the field and when people are utilizing that hard count to create first and goal opportunities. So that's the first part. The second part is getting the players to understand there's consequences to the errors that we make. And whether they're poor play calls, whether they're jumping off sides, whatever those things are, there's consequences. And the consequence in game is that's a free 5 yards that can result in a potential first down that can give them a new set of downs. So we've got to understand those things. You know, we addressed it this morning in the team meeting. We'll address it throughout the week. But it goes back to practice habits. You know, we practice hard. We practice tough. I'm not ever questioning that about our team, but we need to practice smart and understanding the situations within practice that we try to create so that when they come up in game, we know how to handle them.
Steve, same with the penalty question. After review, did you feel that discrepancy was fair, and does that need to be addressed at all with the conference?
The fouls were called. We didn't perform well enough, and that's what we need to focus on. I can't be concerned about how things get called or don't get called. I need to focus on what we need to do and how we can get better.
Stay on the left, Chip. Sark is a play caller. What do you do when your quarterback's making the right read, he's throwing it to the right guy, but they're not connecting, and your running game is feast or famine?
Yeah.
As you said, what are you doing that?
Yeah, I think the one is, you know, we've got to keep pressing for more precision in the passing game, you know, and that starts in practice. And you know, of really making a point and an emphasis of the timing and the where we're at on the field and when the ball should be thrown and the correct spacing on the field. So that's going back to work. That's going back to practice. And that's getting guys working well together with Quinn, with the receivers, with the tight ends, of the timing of when these balls should be thrown and where they should be thrown and where they can expect that ball to be thrown. You know, we're a little bit off. You know, we're just not exactly where I would like us to be. There were some great plays that were made. I mean, obviously that you don't throw for 320 yards without having some good plays in there, but there was plenty of missed opportunities as well that I think we'd all love to have back. And some of that isn't always with the quarterback and the receiver. Sometimes that's the protection, you know, whether that's a guy getting beat one-on-one or a guy missing an assignment that is forcing an earlier throw than he would like to throw it, or forcing a little bit of an errant throw. So it all ties together. It takes all 11 to make that work. I think from a run game standpoint, you know, I was probably a little bit more harsh on the run game post-game, if there's anything in there. I thought we found some things in the run game that gave us some consistency in the fourth quarter that I probably should have called more of those style of runs as the game adjusted. But that's, again, like I said, you guys know me well enough. When the game's over, I analyze my play calling, whether we score 50 points, 30 points, or 13 points. You know, I analyze it tough and hard because I want to be better for our players the next time we go out. And I think there were some things in this game that, as I look back on, I could have been better too, to be fair to those guys, to put them in the best position to be successful.
Hey, Steve, you know, the perception of giving up those leads in the second half is kind of a reality now. On this bye week, how do you keep that from eking into the psyche of young people who were smart enough to realize that this keeps happening?
Sure. Now, I think the reality of it is what we're trying to get to is there's got to be a level of consistency in play. And so, like this morning, for example, I go through our tape with our guys and I show them the game. And, you know, part of it is something very simple as just, you know, effort and population of the ball defensively. I can show a clip in the first quarter or the second quarter where we're flying to the ball, we're getting hats to the ball. Then I can show a play late in the game Saturday where a ball gets completed and we've got a guy wrapped up. And I look and we've got guys watching a tackle being made rather than five hats flying to the ball to help get that man on the ground. And so it's about consistency in our style of play. Ultimately, it comes down to execution. And those are things that, you know, at critical moments in the game, it's about doing your job and doing your job really well and doing it with a consistent manner. You know, the third down scramble that the quarterback has, they're throwing a screen pass to the right. And we defend the screen really well. And we actually had a spy on the quarterback. But the guy who was the spy on the quarterback went to go help on the screen, which wasn't his job. It wasn't a lack of effort. He wanted to help go make a play. But ultimately, you still have to do your job at those critical moments in the game. So those are the things we're trying to emphasize.
In the middle, Armour.
Yeah, Coach, you know, after the game, Quinn had talked about like a fingernail, you know, kind of being missing or being lifted at some point during the week. In hindsight, did that have any effect, do you think, on his performance? And if you don't think that affected him at all, what would you attribute, like, as you look back at the film, as to like the performance that we saw?
Yeah, I don't think it attributed to it. He threw all week. He threw great. I don't think the ball was the issue Saturday. Again, I thought there were some things in there that the precision wasn't right, whether it was him, receivers, O-line, all of it tying together. And ultimately, as a young player on the road, sometimes you can then start to play a little bit hesitant as opposed to just a knowing. And that's what we have to get ourselves to as a group. And it's not just him, it's as a group. When we go into a game and we know how these plays are going to go and how they're going to work predicated off the what we think we're going to get. And then the responsibility of the quarterback, whoever it is to know when we don't get those premier looks that we're looking for, where those secondary reads are, the second, third, fourth reads in the progression. So those are things that we're going to work on with him this week.
On your left, Kirk.
Yes, Steve. Your record's 10-10. How much further along did you think your program would be, and what are some of those reasons?
I'm not concerned about, you know, it's easy to look at the record. We've come a long way as a program. I feel very good about where we've come. I love our style of play. I think we play hard. We play tough. You know, like a lot of programs, I think we're a work in progress. You know, a couple balls bounce a certain way, and our record's different. I wouldn't change how I feel about our program and the direction that we're going in. So, you know, naturally for me, we have to continue to stay the course with what we're doing and a belief in what we're doing. I don't think we wavered a year ago when things got hard in October, November. We won't waver this year. We'll stick to the plan, stick to the course. And I think we've got a great deal of belief in our locker room and what we do and why we do it.
Once a week sports are tough because the emotional swings are so drastic. Now you get 2 weeks. DeMarvian told us, can't let these guys go into a dark place. How do you kind of keep that from happening after this?
Well, I think one, it's, you know, when you hear it from a leader on your team, that naturally it's inside of our locker room that those guys aren't going to let that happen. I think that's the best case scenario. When you talk player-led teams, it's the conversations in the locker room are as much or more important than the conversations I have in a team meeting. So whether it's DeMarvion, Roshan, Bijan, I could name 20 guys, but those guys, the conversations they have, I think are very important. But honestly, we needed the bye, you know, and I think that was something we talked about as a team. We're banged up. We're nicked up right now. We need to get as healthy and as fresh as we can get for a four-game stretch in the end here in November. And I think the players understand that.
Coach, thoughts on Kansas State, and when will you start game planning and working on Kansas State, and your thoughts about the K-State team?
Yeah, we started this morning after the team meeting. Obviously, we're not practicing today, so we're starting to get some initial thoughts on them and just starting to watch them. Tough, hard-nosed team, very disciplined, good schemes, well-coached. You know, they tax you offensively with their run game, you know, because of the quarterback and the running back, and they're both really good weapons. And then they've got some perimeter speed on the outside. I think defensively, you know, an aggressive style of play. They got a really good pass rusher. But those are just the beginning stages for us. You know, we're a little bit more methodical when we have an extra week to prepare. So I don't have all of the nuances to it, but a very good football team that I think coming out of even Saturday's game is thinking they kind of let one get away, you know, with the way they were playing early in the game and then the way the game went. So they've got a big one this week against Oklahoma State. Like I said, there's a lot that's going to happen in our conference. We got to make sure we mow our own lawn and take care of our own business.
Steve, you were saying that in the running game, maybe looking back, were you referring to that drive that started with the pass to Billingsley for 20 yards and Bijan runs for 13 and 9 and Roshan for 5? You got down into their territory. Were you thinking, you know, do we go for it on fourth down, or is that the drive you were thinking about?
I think that's the one. I think we had a first down kind of in the red area there, and we ran the ball, I think, for like a gain of 2, maybe, or maybe even a no gain. I can't remember the exact scenario, but it was.
On first down,
and then I think we threw a pass to Keelan on their sideline, which we just missed, which then in turn puts us in third down. And thought we had a good call and pretty good throw by Quinn. We just missed Xavier kind of in the far end zone there. That happens, you know. I mean, I just don't think you can play football as a one-dimensional team. You got to have balance. You know, we felt like we had a good play call on second down to, if we complete it, whether it's a first down or maybe we're in a third and short scenario. I was trying to stay out of third and longs because I just felt like we were in third and long all game long and putting us behind the eight ball. So I was trying to find a play that could give us something that would get us into third and short. We didn't convert it. So now all of a sudden you're playing a third and long scenario again. So, hey, you know, do you run it again? And if they tackle that one, we're playing third and long there too. So, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Like I said, I look at every angle of the way we call it and what we do and why we do what we do. You know, it didn't work. Said that sometimes that happens.
No, Coach, obviously, you know, going to have lots of close games going forward. You know, Bert Auburn has missed some field goals for you guys this season. I think he's missed 5. Have you thought about potentially reopening, you know, that kicking competition that was so close, you know, in the spring and in training camp? And the second part is, what's the kind of plan for you guys as a coaching staff and players for scheduling-wise for the rest of the week?
No, I feel good about what we're doing kicking game-wise. I think you know, I thought Will had a really good game kicking off Saturday in a pretty tough environment. When that ball got up in the air, the wind, there were some issues there. And I thought he placed the ball really well. The one return they got out on kick return, we didn't cover it great. We had a little mishap into the boundary. But the rest of it, I thought we covered really well against a very good return team. And that was because of his placement of his kicks. He's done a nice job. You know, Bert's made some big kicks for us this year. Obviously had 2 more field goals prior to the miss that he had in the fourth quarter. He just rushed the kick, you know, at the end of the day, he's more than capable of making that kick, and he'll make plenty more kicks for us this year moving forward. Oh, schedule-wise, yes. Yeah. So we didn't practice today. We're doing some community service work today with the guys and focusing on academics. We'll practice. We'll have a light practice tomorrow. Then we'll practice Wednesday and Thursday, and then we won't practice Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and we'll be back on the field Monday.
Over here on your left, Danny.
I guess we'll just keep with the special teams game. What are your thoughts about the punting game right now and just how Daniel has performed since he took over that job?
I thought Daniel punted terrific Saturday. I mean, some phenomenal punts. I mean, very rarely do you see a 54-yarder to the 1-yard line, but I thought he's had really good hang time. We've really minimized the returns, and our gunners are playing fantastic. Keaton Crawford, Keelan Robinson have been tremendous. I thought our protection's been good in the punt game. Really proud of those guys. I think the one punt Danny would like to have back was his last punt of the game, which was just the one he missed hit all game long. He punted the ball really well, but he hits, I think it was a 23-yarder or whatever it was late in the game. So been proud of the work that he's done. You know, he's, again, given us an opportunity to cover. He's punting it in the right direction, and he's letting the cover guys go cover, and we're really negating any return game in the punt game right now.
On your right, Joe.
When the offense might get into a slog, are you talking more with AJ upstairs or Kyle on the sideline?
The whole staff, whole offensive staff, yeah. With constant dialogue, we're all rolling.
Is there anything specific that
Eye in the Sky provides? from AJ?
We ask a lot of information, you know, fronts, pressures, coverages, spacing on the field, potential reads, potential next calls to make based off of alignment of what the defense gave us to previous formations and personnel grouping. So our dialogue's really good. We're fortunate. We've all worked together for quite some time now between myself, Coach Flood, AJ, Coach Banks. A lot of our analyst staff has been with us now for 2 years. And then I think Coach Choice and Coach Marion at this stage of the game, being 8 games in, they're very comfortable with the dialogue on the headset.
Yeah, you mentioned you're giving them the weekend off. You guys doing any team building type thing on the weekend, or do you encourage them to watch some football, stay around the game a bit?
I encourage that, but I also encourage them to get around their families. I think that you know, we've gone 12 straight weeks. You know, when you think about training camp and then 8 straight games, I think these guys need an opportunity to go see their loved ones, see their moms, dads, aunts, uncles, you know, family members, take a step back. But I also do think there is a reflection needed. You know, yeah, watch the Oklahoma State-Kansas State game. Reflect on it. Look at it from a different perspective. And then when we get back Sunday night, we come together, then it's time to go again. But I do think that it's healthy to sometimes take a step back. You know, we'll do our work this week like we did. We covered the game this morning. We'll practice for 3 days. They'll get a good lift Friday morning before they head out. But I do think there's time for some reflection, and it's a great time to be around our loved ones before we go for a really good stretch here for a month straight again.
In the middle, Roger. Steve, the duo of Bijan and Roshan. Bijan's getting into some rarefied air, but on the Texas list, Roshan making the most of his. And then the personality, Bijan's kind of the positive guy. Roshan, maybe you'll get in your face a little more. What has that duo meant to this team, and in tough times, what do they mean to this team?
Well, they're both fantastic individuals, and they're different. You're spot on. They are different people, but what they provide is really pretty incredible. And I think you feel their personalities even more during the tough times. I think they're both very aware people, and they can feel when things are good, and they kind of almost step back and let it be good, and then when there is adversity that strikes, they're the first ones that want to step into the arena to make sure that everything is tight and on the same page. I'll never forget a year ago, Roshan stepping up in front of the team after the Kansas game and having a discussion with the team, with myself being there, about what was going to be needed moving forward. So I just think that those guys are wired the right way. They're unbelievable human beings. Forget how good of players they are. They're great human beings. They've got bright, bright futures ahead of them, whether it's in football, in the business world, in life. They're the right type of people. And I think that they're setting an unbelievable example for a lot of our younger players of what it looks like to be a Longhorn and what it means to be a leader in our program.
You didn't switch to Hudson Card at all. Did you consider it very strongly, and are you open to that if Quinn has future struggles?
Yeah, I didn't consider it very strongly in the game. You know, obviously, it's easy. You know, the quarterback position gets way too much credit when things go good and gets way too much blame when things don't go good. You know, like I said, that would I have liked more precision in the passing game? Does some of that responsibility fall on him? Yes. Some of that responsibility falls on me. Some of it falls on the receivers. Some of it falls on the O-line, the running backs. Everybody has to assume their own responsibility in that. So there's definitely room for growth. He's still a young player for us, but he's got bright future ahead of him. And you know, hopefully we can clean up some of the issues that we had this week so that going into next week, into game week, he's back to razor sharp. Potentially, you know, I don't think that way. I think about what's best for our team in the moment. But I think Quinn is wired the right way. You know, I think he'll be the first one to tell you he would have loved to play better than he did. I think every one of our players will probably say the same thing, you know. So, now what do you do about it? You know, we can only sit back and reflect on the woe is me and the poor me's. I need to focus on, okay, what am I going to do to play better the next time I get my opportunity?
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it.
Audio. Thank you.
Longhorns head coach Steve Sarkisian with the weekly news conference. And, again, the word coming down on Anthony Cook, a broken arm there. He listed him as day-to-day, but he said we'll see where it goes. Of course, this is an open day week, a bye week on the schedule, and the Longhorns will have that open day week. They did not practice today, and there were some community service things that the team was doing today. They'll be back on the practice field tomorrow and go tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. 3 days on the practice field, the next 3 days, and then when that is done, then they'll have the weekend off. As he mentioned, he would encourage them to spend some time with the families and loved ones, and then they'll get back at work next week getting ready for Kansas State. We'll have more on that coming up. We'll have our Longhorn Notebook. We have a Flex 30 update, and we're coming up here in hour number two of Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Bud Light is proud to announce that they are the official.
This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way with you from the UT campus today. Jeff Howe will be back tomorrow. I'll be out tomorrow through Thursday and then back in on Friday. Jeff will be back tomorrow. Coming up in just a few moments, we'll have our second hour Longhorn Notebook, which will be a recap of the press conference you just heard, and some items we'll point out there. But right now, it's time for a Flex 30 update.
Flex ATX for the best high school sports coverage. Listen to the Horn and go to FLXATX.com. Flex 30 is brought to you by Brain Vault. Brain Vault is a revolutionary and patented mouth guard that has been proven to help reduce the risk of concussion. Visit BrainVault.com and join the movement.
Okay, let me get to a couple of things here, and get Snoop's thoughts on a couple of things with this Flex 30 update. There were some big results, and I mentioned that last hour in our Whataburger Top 5, and one of those was Lockhart with a win over Bastrop. So that has made things real interesting in the chase for the playoff spots here, because in 13-4A Division II, Liberty Hill, which had an open date on the schedule, plays Bastrop this week. Liberty Hill's the only team unbeaten in district. They're 4-0. San Antonio Vets Memorial's 3-1. Then you have Lockhart, Tyvee, and the brand-new Piper team all at 2-2. And it's going to be a huge game this week when Piper plays at Lockhart. That could wind up being an elimination game, depending on what else happens in the rest of district play there. However, I got to tell you, Snoop, nothing but nothing is matching up to what is bubbling beneath the surface and developing in 25-6A. And you said you didn't want to think about it too much because the math kind of made your head spin a little bit.
Yes, and you know, I get emotional about my teams, and I think about them losing and winning and how they would feel, you know, very opposite of the computer.
Right, and it's funny. I was just asked by Cliff Thornton of KI, and he was just asking me. I said KI, I'm sorry, like Fox 7. And Cliff just asked me because he and Dennis De La Pena were talking about this and said, you refer to this computer, what's it? And I was like, do you think I'm making it up? It's a real deal. with Jerry Forrest and Pigskin Prep, it's an actual service. And it's a subscription-based service. I'm looking at it right now, and it's a computer readout every week of the things, and it has the wins and the losses and the regional rankings and state rankings. It has all of those very useful tools. But everybody kind of fixates on a little bit about what the point spreads or whatever, if you want to call it. It's not even really a point spread. What the computer is, it's an algorithm, and it's a thing that ultimately displays how much better on the field points wise one team is than the other. It's a computer readout. It's not based on anybody's opinion. It's not based on emotion. That's why I've tried to tell you when you've kind of mentioned that you thought the computer was a jerk. I was like, it's not. It doesn't think and feel like that. That's not how it works. It's just a computer program that takes the data, and then the data adds up to being this. It just computes the math involved. For example, Snoop, now don't get upset about this, okay? I'm just going to tell you. We've got a game Thursday night. We've got LBJ against Eastside Memorial. Or it's now Eastside Early College, okay? LBJ's playing Eastside. According to the computer, there are 119 schools in 5A Division II. LBJ, according to the computer, is the sixth-ranked team, according to the computer, okay, in 5A Division II. Out of 119 teams, Eastside is 119. Now, according to the computer, if you were saying, well, how much better is one team than another, according to the computer, LBJ is 103 points better than Eastside. The computer is not picking LBJ to beat Eastside by 103 points. It's a math computerized algorithmic formula, okay? Clearly, LBJ's not going to score 103 points. And I know they scored 89 in a game this year, but they're not going to score 103. And, you know, Coach Fenner, he has a responsibility to get younger players out on the field. He did that last week. They won 82 to nothing for Travis, and he had the bench empty. But when guys run for long touchdowns or whatever, or the other team fumbles inside their own 10-yard line, and then, you know, a freshman takes it in for a touchdown, there's not an awful lot you can do about a lot of those types of things. But that's just an example of what I'm talking about. Like, for example, a computer last week, Snoop, said that Westlake was 66 points better than Austin High. You remember what the final score was?
It was 70 to nothing.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay? So it's a computer-based formula thing.
We love you, Austin High.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's a computer-based thing. It's a formula. It has nothing to do with anyone's opinion on anything. It's just numbers fed into a system. The numbers elicit the emotion from fans or whoever is following or whatever, that sort of thing. That's my point about that. Okay. Now, speaking of math, the computer does its job, but just regular rudimentary Craig Way arithmetic has come up with the other stuff. With regard, because it's pretty easy, you just have to sit down and actually crunch the numbers and go back over the schedules to understand what could be happening in 25-6A. We know Vandegrift and Round Rock are going to be headed for the playoffs. The question is, who's going to get the third and fourth spots, or the other two playoff spots, out of 25-6A? And, for that matter, how that affects whether Vandegrift goes Division I or Division II. We know that. We've talked about that. It's quite simple, really. If Cedar Ridge draws one of those other two playoff spots, Vandegrift will stay like they've been doing in prior years and play Division II. If, however, Vista Ridge and Manor wind up as the other two playoff spots, and Vandegrift will go Division I. I know last week you were suggesting, not to Coach Sanders, by the way, you're suggesting maybe it might be a good idea for Vandegrift to lose to Cedar Ridge. They didn't. They won 29-7. But remember I said there's other avenues involved here? Well, the door opened when Manor not only beat Vista Ridge, but when they beat them 21-7. Here's the key. The district tiebreakers are such that you go when three teams are tied for two playoff spots or even one playoff spot. What you do is, how do they do against each other head-to-head? Well, it's a round-robin split. Vista Ridge beat Cedar Ridge, who beat Manor, who beat Vista Ridge. So they all went 1-1 against each other in equal round-robin fashion. No one of the three had the edge on the other. So the next thing you go to is, what is the point differential against one another in those games? Well, there's another thing to keep in mind. There's a ceiling, a cap, if you will, put on it to prevent teams running it up on another team to help their own cause. I know you're in favor of that, right,
right, Stu? Yes.
Okay. The cap, I will point out, in 13-6A, or excuse me, in 25-6A, is one of the lower caps I've seen. It's a plus 13. That's the cap. As opposed to, say, in 13-5A D2, where the cap is plus 18. Remember, LBJ was awarded 18 because Northeast had to forfeit a game when they had the staff infection thing and they couldn't play the game. And it was just in case of tie-breaking situation. Well, that's obviously not going to come to play in LBJ's case. But that was an 18-point ceiling. In 25-6A, the ceiling is 13. So Vista Ridge beats Cedar Ridge 30-10, but you only get 13 points on the plus side for that. Cedar Ridge then beats Maynard 22-0. They only get a plus 13. Maynard beats Vista Ridge by 14 points. They get plus 13. So what do you have? Zero. Net zero for all three. They're even. So not only are they all three even in round robin, wins head-to-head, they're all even in their point differentials, plus 13 and a minus 13, all the way around. So it's zero all the way around. So the next tie break, and I got to tell you, in all the years of doing high school football, I don't remember a multi-layered, multi-tiered point differential that has to go to this next tier. But it might have to. Now, there's two games remaining in the regular season. But the next tier is, what is your point differential in all of your district games? And that includes the head-to-heads, but includes everybody in your district. And again, 13 is the most you can get. 13 is the most you can surrender. So as it stands today, Vista Ridge is a plus 21 overall. And then I believe it's Maynard is a plus 10, and Cedar Ridge is a plus 13, I think it is. But the thing you have to keep in mind is Vista Ridge still has to play Vandegrift and Round Rock. And Cedar Ridge still, I believe, has to play Round Rock. So that's where that other problem came. In fact, Cedar Ridge plays
Round Rock
this week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's more math that will come into all of this before this is done. But that's where it is right now. This is your multi-layered three-way point differential tiebreak that quite frankly, unless some unexpected things happen, would have to go to another level. And here's what I mean by unexpected. Cedar Ridge plays McNeil last week of the regular season. If they were to lose that game, or if Vista Ridge were to beat Vandegrift or Round Rock, or if Cedar Ridge were to beat Round Rock, then it changes the dynamic of the tiebreak then, because you get a win that otherwise would be factored in as a loss, keeping the tiebreak intact because Maynard has already lost to both Vandegrift and Round Rock. So that's where that all comes in. So there it is. There's your Flex 30 update. Did I give you another headache?
Set
all that up.
I guess I'm not even going to pay no attention to it until these important games are played this weekend. Yeah, you're right. Vista Ridge Cedar Ridge Round Rock is huge.
Yeah, it is. And by the way, in case you're wanting another computer, likes Round Rock by 15 okay. in that game. The computer likes Vandegrift to beat Vista Ridge by 36. Maynard closes, by the way, with Westwood this week at home, and then Stony Point the final week. I just gave those numbers, but some folks might look at that and say, boy, you know, if Vista Ridge takes two minus 13 in the differential column losses to Vandegrift and Round Rock, it might knock them completely out. But if they play both very tight games or whatever, I was explaining to somebody, I said, you know, if Vista Ridge had just gotten one more field goal, a safety even, they would have lost by 12, and they would have had the upper hand in that three-way tiebreak. But because they lost by more than 12 points, that's why you have a three-way net zero tiebreak. So there you go. And there'll be more to happen during the course of the week about that. And next week, there's still football left to be played. There's 2 weeks left to go. But that's where it stands right now with 2 weeks left in the regular season. Okay, time now for this hour's edition of The Notebook.
Longhorn Notebook.
Brought to you by Erin Bowersock, the home loan expert. Check her out on the web at bowersockteam.com. Some of the things that we were recapping, in case you missed it, from the news conference. And there'll be more of that during the course of the week about some of the things that Sark has talked about. And you know, he talked about cleaning up the penalties that really had been kind of hurting the team in practice. He said, you know, that's got to be something we do smart. He said we have to practice smarter in order to make sure those things don't wind up being a factor in the game. And he talked about the jumps into the neutral zone in plus territory or false starts, those kinds of things, not to mention the DPIs, defensive pass interference calls. That was one thing that came up with as well. He also pointed out that it was going to be important when he was asked about, I think it was Cedric Golden asked him from the Austin American-Statesman, asked him about the second half leads getting away from Texas. He said because it's a thing right now, because of the way that has happened. And he said, there has to be a level of consistency with the play. And I thought it was pretty interesting the way he described it. He said, I can show the guys, he said, tape. I mean, it's video cut up now. He said, I can show the guys video of a play made in the first quarter where everybody's flying to the football, as he likes to say, populating the football. They're getting around the ball. And everybody's closing in on it, making the tackle. Even the guys who are not making the tackle, closing in on making the tackle. And so everybody around the football, what's that old phrase, party at the football, that kind of thing, getting around the ball. Then there'll be a similar play, you can show them in the fourth quarter, where maybe two guys are trying to make the play, and there's three other guys in the pretty close vicinity, but they're kind of in the soccer parlance, ball watching, so to speak. They're not, or basketball uses that as well, ball watching, like on the offensive side, not getting enough, not being in position and not finishing to make the play. He said that's one of the areas they have to clean up. He said we've got to practice smarter to do that. Got to clean that up in practice as well. Talked about the health injury, as I mentioned, and also about what they're going to do during this bye week. They're doing some community service things today. They were off from the practice field this week, but then they're going to go three straight days of practice, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then – he was asked about, what he did. I think it was Kirk Bowles asked him, ask him to watch games or this or that. And he said some of that, but mainly we're going to encourage him, spend time with your families, get with your loved ones, and do that. And if you, pay attention to what else is going on, the other game things, but then come back ready to go on Sunday and then get in that full week of work getting ready for Kansas State. And again, in case you didn't hear, we do not yet know the start time for that game in Manhattan at K-State. The television networks, no surprise about this at all. They're going to exercise another one of the, as I call it, the dreaded six-day selection window where they wait until the week before to decide. So Texas, one of five games that the television networks will, the Texas K-State game, will wait until at least Saturday night, if not Sunday morning, to announce the start time of that game in Manhattan a week from this Saturday. All right, there's our Longhorn Notebook. We'll be back to wrap up today's edition of Light the Tower coming up on the Horn.
It's Ram Truck Power Days and Jeep Adventure Days at the original Nile Maxwell dealership, Nile Maxwell.
Okay, we're done for the day, and we invite you to stay tuned because Chad and Zay are up next. Tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, Jeff will be back. Jeff will be back in tomorrow. And he and Snoop will run through. So now Snoop, you're going to be okay on this reading those statewide rankings for the Whataburger
yes.
Top 5, the double meat with cheese edition
I got
deal
you.
Tomorrow?
You got even okay. 6A, or 6-man, excuse me.
Okay. All right. That'll be coming up tomorrow. All right. Thanks to Snoop for all of his help. We invite you to stay tuned. Chad and Zay are up next, and I'll be back on Friday. So tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, it'll be Jeff and Snoop. Until next time, I'm Craig Wade. Thanks for joining us for Light the Tower on the Horn.
The average home sells for over the asking price. And with Orchard's win-win program, you could